And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Standing Room Only podcast. Yes, I'm your host, Ben Standing, and I cover the Washington Commanders for The Athletic. Before I forget, let me just say happy Thanksgiving to everyone. I'm talking to you on Tuesday morning, but this will be the last episode I put up before Thanksgiving. So I wanted to give that shout out. Hope you guys, whether you're just watching football all day, not just, that's what people do on Thanksgiving, eating all the food or hanging out with your family, hope you have a blast, whatever you end up doing. And speaking of having a blast, I think you guys will really enjoy this episode. I came up with a bunch of fill-in-the-blank or true and false questions regarding the Commanders. Helping me give those answers is our pal with the Washington Post, Nikki Jabvala. You can, of course, follow Nikki on Twitter at Nikki Jabvala, NikkiJabvala. Follow me on Twitter at Ben Standing and subscribe to The Athletic. Not to mention, subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or listen ad-free on The Athletic. Interesting week, of course. Oh, well, let me not forget. If you missed it, I did a solo podcast after the Houston game. In addition, I spoke with our NFL draft insider Dane Brugler regarding the 2023 draft. We got a little bit of a head start on the quarterbacks, offensive line, sleepers. Why does Dane think that quarterback play in the NFL is down, etc. So a really good primer there. As you start looking ahead, even just for bowl season coming up, to get a feel for some of the players to keep an eye on for sure. Okay, so interesting week here, of course, for the Commanders. We keep looking now at 6-5. They're obviously in this playoff mix, right? They are the 8th seed. I guess there's no 8th seed, but you know what I mean. 7 teams make the playoffs with 3 wild cards. Washington is the first team on the outside, and they are half a game behind Seattle, and they're right there in the mix. But this week, it's a little bit of a must-win for the team they're playing, and that's the Atlanta Falcons, because the Atlanta is the one team directly behind Washington at 5-6. With a loss, Atlanta would be 2 games back of Washington and had lost a head-to-head, so you would kind of think that they would be out. But if they win, now all of a sudden they're tied with Washington, would have the head-to-head tiebreaker, and, you know, would knock Washington back a bit further. The Commanders, if they win, and if the Giants lose on Thursday at Dallas, then the Week 13 matchup in New York would give Washington a chance to tie the Giants, which seemed implausible not that long ago, considering how hot the Giants started the season and how cold Washington did. But that's where we're at right now. We're talking about the playoffs. Yes, Jim Moore, we're talking about the playoffs because the Commanders have put themselves in that position, winning 5 of 6. And now, of course, they're going to go forward with Taylor Heinicke at quarterback. Chase Young is on the 53. Whether he plays this week is another story. That's one of the questions Nikki and I discussed, is when will Chase Young actually play? So all that is in the mix as well. All right, and you know, as far as these questions go, one of them is, who's the most underrated player during this 5-1 stretch? And we went through some players. I was thinking about it afterwards, though. I think one name to keep an eye on, and it's not a player, or to mention, I should say, not a player, is defensive line coach Jeff Scanina, because we keep talking about how this defensive line has really blossomed. It's not like John Allen and Jerron Payne and Montez Sweat haven't played well before, but this feels like it's the most connected they have been. And obviously kudos also to James Smith Williams and Casey Tuhill, F.A. Obata, John Ridgeway has really come on. They have really done a good job. And, you know, I always, you know, say it's, you can't always tell where's the line between the player's development and the assistant sort of imploring them along the way and helping them out. But it doesn't seem like it's a coincidence that they played better since Skinnina took over as the full-time defensive line coach after they fired Sam Mills in training camp. So just wanted to mention that. Don't always mention the assistants below the coach and the coordinators, but I thought that was in my head as we were discussing that category, that was something that came to mind for sure. No more dilly-dallying. I don't know. Do people say that? Am I sounding like an old guy if I say that? Who knows? In any event, let's get to it. Here is my conversation with Nikki Jhabvala. Fill in the blanks and true or false questions to give us a better feel for where things are at with the Commanders right here on the Standard Room Only Podcast.
All right. Welcoming back to the podcast. You know her, you love her. The Washington Post lead beat reporter for the Commanders, Nikki Jhabvala, is with me. I saw you at an ungodly early hour this morning at the Houston airport. We've arrived back in D.C. We've heard from Ron Rivera, and now we're going to catch up for a minute. How are you doing with all this traveling and all this winning?
It's a lot of traveling. I do not like when the clear lane doesn't work like it's supposed to, and I have to sprint through the airport like I ended up doing in Houston this morning. But otherwise, everything is going well, and I'm enjoying watching winning football again.
It really is wild. I mean, to think we're 1-4, and the Chicago Bears were a half a yard away from making them 1-5, to now they are you know, where they are, they're in the conversation for the playoffs, like for real, not just like hypothetically, but like in a real way. And there's like the momentum is significant to the point. We just got off the Zoom a little bit ago with Ron Rivera. He was flat out giddy. Like, I mean, I had to ask him. I was like, dude, what is going on here? Because I've never seen you this happy. That's where they are right now. The head coach of a football team middle of the season is like all smiles.
Life comes at you fast. And in the case of the Commanders, it's come in like a really positive way, on the field, that is. It's been really interesting to watch. I mean, because now we're starting to see a lot of the things that Ron Rivera has been preaching and saying would happen for years, really. Like, we need guys to grow and develop. Well, now they got two young guys starting in the secondary, and Jamin and Davis is starting to play, you know, more like, you know, a first round guy. You know, he's preached consistency. They've, you know, stacked 5 wins out of their last 6 games. You know, they got a quarterback they believe in. Whether they believe he's a long-term starter beyond the season, we'll see. And they got a lot of dynamic playmakers. So They're in really good standing right now, and it's fun to see them kind of emerge as a team on the rise.
I'll get to the true, false, and fill in the blank questions that I meticulously prepared for this in the last 10 minutes. But just to that point of like, this is what Ron Rivera has been saying what would happen. You know, this is what is the challenge, I think, with focusing on an NFL team week to week, because there is only the one game. The drama swings one way or the other so often. And, you know, I know I try to be grounded. I know you do as well. And it's just hard sometimes because, you know, you're watching this and we're going, what are you supposed to say? I mean, they're floundering here. They're floundering there, where we see the reaction on Twitter. We have people asking us questions on radio shows or whatever. And like it's hard sometimes. Like, well, I don't know what to say, but also we can't see everything, right? We don't see practices. So all we can do is sort of watch the games, but this is starting to round into form. But it is so hard, I think, to just be patient, but which is basically what he's been preaching all this time. And, you know, good for him, I guess it's paying off.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think he's got, like, and I kind of want to ask about this today, but we're limited to only a couple questions on the Zooms, but you know, I go way back to like his first presser. I actually wasn't even on the beat at the time, but I think it was at the combine with you guys. And he was talking about finding his core players. And like, this is the first time where I feel like he seems to have found his core players. I mean, like, they got their leaders in the locker room. They got really strong players on offense. They got a really good defense, players that they've extended and kept. Their special teams looks really good. Like, they're playing complementary football, which I know is like a buzzword they like to use, but it's true. All three phases are contributing. Not one is a liability right now. And that's usually been the case over the years. But, you know, I think the bigger thing is those core players, guys like Terry and John Allen and DeRon. We'll see what they do with him, but you know, he's become a really good player up front. You know, Jamin Davis coming into his own. I really like what Derek Forrest and Benjamin St. Juice are doing in the secondary. Curtis coming into his own after missing more than almost a year with that injury. And, you know, Taylor kind of being the glue of it all at quarterback. It's fun to watch. It's interesting to watch. And you just kind of hope it lasts.
Yeah, for sure. And all right, last thing I'll say before we go into this. Yesterday was a really good example. There's nothing there. I got a lot of pet peeves, people on Twitter. One of the biggest ones is when people say, you just want to talk about them losing. You're always negative, blah, blah, blah. And I promise you, yesterday was a really great example of why that is insane, because they were really in a good mood. John Allen, easily his best press conference he's ever given with us at any point. And you know why? Because they're winning. I don't want to be around miserable people. I got my own problems. Right. So
let's clear this up now. None of us want them to lose. When they lose, they are a bear to deal with. We don't like that. And nobody likes to read about losing teams, so nobody reads our work. So selfishly, we like them to win. You have it.
There you have it. All right, let's get to the questions. Neither one of us are allowed to pass. There's no phone a friend, although you've got, if you want to ask your dogs for help, that's fine. All right.
Okay.
Well, just to put a capper on this game, what was your biggest takeaway from the win in any capacity?
I think the biggest takeaway for me was their consistency. You know, I think in the past we've seen them have like strong games, and then the next game they'll completely collapse, or they'll have a strong half and the next half they'll implode. I thought this game, taken in conjunction with the win in Philly, I thought it showed a lot about this team, going from the best team in the league to the worst and still maintaining their level of play. You know, it wasn't perfect. I don't think any of their games have been perfect. That's kind of the Heineke style anyway.
Right.
But certainly in the first half, they were pretty freaking dominant. They let up a little bit in the second half. But I like Ron, I mean, I like how they responded. And I think Taylor has changed a lot this season too. You want me to explain?
Sure. Go for it.
Okay. I just think he's learned a lot. I you can see it. I mean, I thought the Minnesota game especially was a big one where he's not forcing things. He'll throw it away or take a knee, or you know, they'll take the less glamorous play so as not to force something and risk interception or worse. And I think that's huge. My dog says hello. And no disrespect to Carson Wentz, but I think that was something that he seemed to struggle with. He was always going for that home run play, and it would get him into trouble quite a bit. It would get the line into trouble. But I think Taylor is really showing that he's quite capable of developing when he gets an opportunity. And I don't know, I just kind of think that opens up a bigger opportunity for him and for the team going forward.
We'll talk more about Heineke in a second, but to your point of sort of that he's like grown or matured or whatever exactly you said, Rivera today said that Taylor's kind of a hyper guy out there. And that's true. I get it. But like when we're around him in the locker room, his personal maturity seems to have grown a lot. He is very calm. He does not at all seem like he's affected by anything that's happening, good or bad. And that to me, I mean, obviously last year, you know, since he's arrived, it's been a crazy circumstance. He shows up, has to play Tom Brady in the playoffs. Then last year gets thrust to be the starter for 15 games. And this year he just, you know, kind of figured he was the bench guy, but he just seems like he's good with himself. And I think that's I think that's part of what rubs off on people as well.
I think he's always been like that. Like, I mean, we didn't get to see him in person because of the COVID restrictions, but last year I thought he was the same way. Like, you know, at times where it's like the walls are collapsing around this franchise and he seems pretty even keeled. Everybody expects him to screw up because he's an undrafted kid or he's not the designated starter, and he seemed pretty even keeled. And then going into this situation, he's very realistic about what he is, what the team views him as, what his role is. And he just comes in and does his thing. And, you know, I think it's, as we're around him more, I think we've come to realize that a lot of it is a product of his journey in the NFL and, you know, nearly being out of the game entirely. He was for a stretch, but, you know, almost moving on completely to finish his mathematics degree at Old Dominion. And now he's back. So he doesn't take anything for granted. And I just think that's like, I think that's such a good thing for a developing team, younger team, new team that's kind of emerging like they are. I think that's such a good message. Like when that's your quarterback, like if he feels like that, you know, yeah, a lot of the other guys should too.
Yeah, for sure. I guess in my head, it's sort of like the only time we've ever seen Taylor Heinicke in the locker room, essentially, prior to being back in, was that video of him with the St. Louis Battlehawks where he's shotgunning beer, which seems to be more in line with the pylon diving kind of a guy who's hyper. And that's why, yeah, I'm kind of like, now that we see him like in the wild, as it were, it's like, oh, he's actually a, yeah, fairly calmer guy. But anyway, people mature. All right, let's get back.
Until he's got Bush Light on a plane and he's wearing everybody's chain.
Oh my God. That's so unfortunate. We'll have to find out somehow what the punishment was he got for that. Cause he got, I guess he broke the rule, but he kind of got screwed because all his teammates were filming him when he had the beer. He was trying to be low key with the trash can. All right. Anyway, nice. Fill in the blank. The most underrated player during this winning stretch, they've won 5 of 6. The most underrated player during this winning stretch is
underrated.
All right, I'll give you one.
You go first.
Okay, well, yeah, just to take you a look. It's almost hard to say anybody, if you're talking like starters, is completely underrated, because we do talk about these guys a lot. But I'm going to go with Montez Sweat, because when we typically are talking about the line, John Allen, Daron Payne getting the headlines, and that's completely warranted. And like the young secondary has really gained some momentum with the conversation over the last few weeks for justifiable reasons. And then, of course, we talk about Heinicke. But like Montez Sweat has really picked up his game in the last few weeks. Similar to the turnovers, he kept saying the sacks aren't coming, but when they do, they'll come in bunches. And now he has 5 in a handful of games, and he is really holding his own. I mean, you know, we'll get to Chase Young in a minute, but I just think, like, you know, he gives them that outside presence that helps, you know, accentuate what the two dudes are doing in the middle. So I'm not saying he's like ignored, but like I feel like we probably should be talking about him more, especially during this stretch, than we have been. But there's been so many other people to kind of get to.
No, I agree. I think that's a good one. I think he's really been playing well. I'm very curious to see how the line plays together whenever Chase Young comes back. But yeah, I think Montez is a good one. I was going to say, and I'm probably going to take shit for this, but am I allowed to say that? I said it.
Yeah, it's all right. Nobody's listening.
I'm actually going to say Bobby McCain.
I like it.
I think he's, you know, I think in and of himself, there are certainly better DBs. He has had his mistakes. I think he's that perfect personality and type of player for what they need right now. You know, they rearranged the secondary in the last few weeks to try to get Derek Forrest on the field more because he's playing really, really well. And they were able to do that because they can move Bobby McCain down. How many free safeties can, oh yeah, I'll just move down to the slot nickel, no big deal. Slot corner, no big deal. Well, he's already played corner in his past. He knows how to play safety. He, like everybody else in that secondary, can pretty much play every position.
Position it's a flexibility. Position flexibility, I hear, is a good thing for this team.
Flexibility, yes. The more you can do. But I just think they seem to have a really good rapport in that secondary. You can see them, you know, they have like their mini powwow back there in the locker room, which is brilliant because no media member wants to go over and interrupt. So they never have to talk to us.
When if you approach the defensive backs, you definitely need to be ready. Because I'm not saying they're not mean, but they will include you in their banter potentially. I've gotten the death stare or the questioning or the snickering multiple times walking over there, and you got to be prepared because they are the loud part of the room.
They are very loud. They are very loud and boisterous, and they have very heated conversations about everything from like their moms to Rod Wave to whatever you want to call it. So. They're a close-knit group, and I think it shows on the field, and I think a lot of it is because of Bobby, because I think he's kind of the glue back there. Is he the best corner / safety? No, but I think he's really good for what they need in developing these young guys and being versatile to move around the secondary. So, underrated. Bobby McCain. And because he told me when he first arrived that when they got good, that I need to write that shit. Because he was very unhappy with us writing negative stuff because they sucked at the time.
I remember that Atlanta game. He made his presence felt that one for sure. I like that one, and he is, he's physical. I mean, he played effectively free safety, but he plays like a guy that could play closer to the line of scrimmage. He's obviously not the biggest guy, but he's not afraid to mix it up, and that attitude I think really helps. You know, set the tone and so on, along with the position flexibility. He's a
thumper. Also, say hello to Lewis. Look at that nugget.
What up, dude? People can't see it, but that's all right. But the dog is there. I was telling Nikki before I did a TV hit earlier, and Lenny jumped up while I was doing live television behind me. I saw him there, and then the anchor made a point of saying, "I don't know if you know Ben, but your cat's behind you." I'm like, "Yeah,
I'm aware." Where's Len? Bring him out.
We'll see where I don't know where he's at, but he's trying to come up with his own questions for what's going on here. All right, you mentioned Chase Young earlier. Let's get to him. We talked about today. He was activated to the 53 player roster today. Not a surprise. We knew this was happening. His window closed. The 21 day window closes on Wednesday, so it was going to have to happen, or they lose him for the season. But the question is, when's he actually going to play? And I don't think Ron Rivera gave us a definitive answer on that. So here's the question. We're going into week 12. The bye is week 14. Will Chase Young play before the bye week?
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie? Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic.
See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
I think he will.
You think he plays this week?
I could see him in like situational downs, things like that. I think he's going to play very little, as Ron alluded to in the presser. I think he's going to play very little. And rightfully so. I mean, like he said, he's only really had 9 practices. And at this point in the season, there's hardly any contact in these practices. It's not like training camp when you got, you know, a certain number of full contact practices. Like, these guys are barely touching each other. So to go from, you know, missing 19 games to, you know, full throttle, you know, that's not going to happen. So I could see him playing this week. It's just not going to be like what we're used to.
Right. And Rivera said that he expects 12 to 16 snaps for Chase whenever he is able to play, ramp it up to like 20 to third, mid 20s to mid 30s, which is not a lot even at the ramp up end. So I think it's important to recognize that whatever version of Chase Young you think you're getting this year, it's not probably going to be the star one, other than maybe a splash player too. He's going to be in that right. Casey Tuhill-ish type of snap count. Maybe I'm being a contrarian here. I'm going to say he doesn't play until after the bye week. I mean, it doesn't seem to me like he's going to play this week. We'll see. We're talking on Tuesday. On Monday. Mm-hmm. If he goes out and practices all week, then, you know, that could change the story. But it sounds like Rivera continues to say they need to see him go kind of full out in practice, and he hasn't done that yet, it doesn't sound like. So I just think maybe they sit him this week, and then once you get to this week, you're going up to New York, you're playing on the turf, which everybody thinks sucks. So I don't know. I'm going to go he doesn't play until after the bye.
So he can come back and play on that grass at FedEx Field where so many...
Right, nobody gets hurt there. Look, it's new turf. You can read about it on The Athletic. Yeah, we did. All right, let's go back to the quarterback, Taylor Heinicke, barring injury. Now, as we, of course, know, the cat's out of the bag. Ron Rivera said that Heinicke will start. It is effectively a week-to-week thing, yada, yada, yada. Carson Wentz at this moment is still not activated. Maybe he's this week, maybe not. It's Heinicke's job until it's not.
He hasn't even been designated to return to practice. We haven't even made it that far.
Right. Correct. So basically, Heinicke is a starter until he's not. But that said, true or false, Taylor Heinicke will start the remaining 6 regular season games barring injury.
Yes, true. I mean, did you remember those first 6? Carson, I guess the only way it wouldn't be true is if they completely implode over these next 5 games and it's Sam Howell time. But it's not going to be a Carson Wentz time. I don't.
Right.
I shouldn't make any guarantees with this team.
Right. I mean, yeah, right. If they lose to Atlanta and lose to the Giants and then go on the bye, could that be a point where they go back to Wentz? Sure, like that could make some sense, but it just doesn't feel like it's going to be the case. And I also think, whether it's been said directly or not, the decision to do this, even though Rivera continues to say it's a one-week thing, we'll see, is to say we screwed up on the Wentz deal. In that, he's not the answer. Even maybe he helps him win a game this year somehow, but he's not the guy they thought they were hoping to get, because it's not getting him wasn't just about this year. It's about going forward. And if you're not going to just say he's coming back in, you're just not going to worry. You worry about next year. And there's no way you would keep him for the $20-something million. You know what I mean? So you put it all together. Right. It does feel like it's going to be Heinicke the rest of the way, barring injury or, like you said, a pure implosion in which they would probably go to Hal or something like that. Are you cool with that, though? Like, do you think, I mean, I guess we all agree, right? At this point, like John Allen said, I can't explain it. I don't know why it's working.
Yeah.
But it is. And I think that sometimes you just have to kind of roll with it.
Yeah. I mean, I don't envision them going back to Carson Wentz at all this season. I mean, I thought before I even played that they were going to move on from after the season anyway, which is why they didn't move the money around to create more cap space this season. You know, it was after those first six games when it was a disaster, it was very clear that it's over. So I don't see him going back to them. There's always a scenario with this team and every other team in which they could justify it, I'm sure, but I'm not seeing it.
Can I talk about not being popular? Can I defend Carson Wentz for a second?
By all means.
Okay, so clearly the team overall was a much more of a mess early in the season than they are now. The offensive line, I don't know if the offensive line is particularly good now. They seem to be playing better, and whether that's because of Heinicke's mobility and whatever or not, they certainly weren't playing well for Wentz. They benched Trey Turner, who's now playing, and nobody seems to have an issue with that. Wentz went through multiple centers. At least Heinicke, for the most part, has been fairly consistent with Tyler Larson. Brian Robinson didn't play the first four games, and even in the fifth and sixth game, he's only just coming back from two gunshot wounds. You know, where else can I go? The defense is giving up, you know, one big play after another. And there was a stat today that's, I want to say, Doug, I don't know how to say his last name, Kied from Pro Football Focus. Oh, I don't know. Stat, I don't have the exact number, but basically it was the receivers dropped somewhere like around a dozen or 14 passes from Wentz. And since Heinicke's been starting, they've dropped zero. Now, maybe there's something about the way these guys are throwing the ball, but the general consistency, something. So, like, and lastly on Wentz, all this talk about how they're vibing with Heinicke, I get it. This whole streak started when Wentz played the second half of the Bears game with a broken finger. And I know he wasn't good, but that says a lot, right? You know, people write sonnets about people, football players who play with broken appendages. So I'm not suggesting they should go back to Wentz. I'm just saying, if it was reversed and Heinicke had gotten the start, I don't know that we'd be in any different spot than we were in now, but it is what it is.
I agree with you on a lot of that, except a lot of the offensive stuff. Like, yeah, the defense was giving up those big plays and they've reduced those significantly. The defense has improved on the whole majorly. The offense, I think Heinicke helps align with his mobility.
Yeah.
I still think they make mistakes. I mean, shoot, Tyler Larson had that snap over his head that he had to save and throw out of bounds. I don't think Trey Turner is a good guard, not then and not now. I think having Brian Robinson helps, but even without him, they had Antonio Gibson, Terry McLaurin, Curtis Samuel, Logan Thomas was working his way back. I mean, they had a number of playmakers. I think it's just the way he plays. And again, I still think it's, you know, the fact that he's always trying to make those home run plays. He's still got an incredible arm, Carson. And I think from what it looks like, he's been a really good teammate. I mean, everybody seems to be fine with him. Him and the rest of the quarterbacks get along quite well. And he's been very nice to us. There's nothing against him personally. I just think Heinicke makes the offense around him better because he can move.
Yeah. I also think the single biggest difference between them that I think is what's working is Carson Wentz has admitted flat out on the record and everything that his mindset is I'm throwing the ball, looking for the big play at all times. And Heinicke's mindset is I'm getting the ball into the hands of my playmakers. I don't care if it's a 1 yard pass and letting them do their thing. And we see that with Terry McLaurin and these 50-50 balls in particular. That's what Heinicke is doing. I do think that Robinson's they didn't have that type of interior runner, the tough guy runner, and that's helping keep the chains moving, but so is Heinicke for sure. yes or no, we can just move on. Is Heinicke the QB1 starting next year?
No. And I was adamant about this before this past weekend, but now I'm wondering if there are things he can do to make the team feel otherwise. I mean, he's always going to have the physical limitations, but I do think his development year over year has made me kind of question the narrative of, could he be a long-term starter in this league? I mean, 3 years ago, no, there was a reason he was a free agent for months. There was a reason he was a backup and they only used him when they went to injury. But I think he has shown enough to make him rethink that. And I think they're going to have to give it serious consideration. He's going to be a free agent. They should resign him, backup or starter, because you need a good backup. But the bigger decision, I think they're going to have to weigh heavily, especially because they're winning. They're not going to be, you know, in the top 10 in the draft looking at, you know, one of the top quarterbacks unless they want to give up a haul and trade up. And it's not like great quarterbacks come on the open market every so often. So
yeah,
I think he's going to have to be in the consideration, but I think they should really re-sign him before he hits the market.
All right, we'll come back to that in a second. I've been really positive here, which is rare if you know, for you and me podcast. But let's go with this. Is Rivera and the front office getting something of a pass at the moment over the Carson Wentz trade and the William Jackson situation because everybody's focused on the winning, which is, of course, what people should be doing. But those are the two biggest transactional choices they've made in the veteran market, and both, well, certainly the Jackson one's a big flop, and Wentz is looking, like we're saying, like probably going to be a one and done, and they gave up the picks and took on the money and so on. Are they getting are they getting something of a pass, or does it not, it just, you know, nobody's perfect, you make mistakes, and who cares?
I don't think they're getting a pass. I do think we've been critical of both moves, the Wentz move especially, and I've still yet to figure that one out fully. I mean, obviously we know they needed a quarterback, but that one and the circumstances and the cost, none of it made sense to me. The William Jackson thing, I don't think they're getting a pass. I think a lot of it has kind of been hidden under all the other insane things that have happened with this franchise. That said, I do like that this front office is willing to cut ties when it doesn't work. I don't know if you know this, but I used to cover the Denver Broncos.
Heard about it.
Yeah. They did not do that. They would keep guys year after year after year when it was clear that they was not working. And granted, sometimes you have to do that given the money or the financial situation or whatever. This one, at least they got something for him. We'll see if it actually turns out to be something since he's on IR and the pick was based on playing time for him. It was a conditional pick. But yeah, I mean, clearly that was a mistake. They've admitted as much and they got to cut ties and move on. And I think they recognize smartly that Benjamin St. Juice is a player that you can't sideline any longer. So I give him credit for moving on and finding the better player, developing the better player. But yeah, obviously that was a massive mistake in free agency.
Yeah, I mean, I think right Jackson happened, and then like two or three days later, or right about the exact same point, Dan Snyder, right? Wasn't that when the story of him selling the
not
team?
Even days later, literally like
that day, the next
within
day,
within the same hour.
Like, right, right.
And this is also when like Brian Robinson was going to get his first start, and Carson Wentz was dealing with a back injury, and then by the end of this was all in Chicago, you know, by the end of the evening, he also had a broken finger. So.
Oh yeah. When the first report that he was disgruntled and all that happened, but didn't like right when the trade deadline happened, right when he got traded, like within hours of the next day or somewhere, like it was like before we could even get to ask about William Jackson, something bigger happened. I don't remember exactly what it was because too many things happened.
Might have been the Carl Racine day. When was the trade deadline?
Week 8. I think it was a few weeks ago at this point.
Yeah, I don't know. There's been a lot.
So yeah. Well, anyway, I'll just say this on the Wentz thing. If I could ask Ron something, if I was going to give him sodium pentothal, probably a lot of the questions I would ask first. But on this topic, it would be sort of like, do you regret that salesman Ron was too out in front as soon as the season ended, talking about getting a quarterback upgrade, which kind of boxed him into not going with Heinicke, even if he wanted to? Because, like, you could, after all the talk about we're going to do something, whatever, he was pretty dismissive of Heinicke, like the idea that he could be the guy. And
he was dismissive of Heinicke as of 3 weeks ago.
Yes.
Let's be real.
Yeah, no, for sure. All right, let me, next one. True or false? Jamin Davis has improved more than any other player over the course of the season.
False.
Ooh.
He's improved. He's definitely improved. More than any other player? No.
Do you have another player then who's improved more?
I would put Benjamin St. Juice and Derek Forrest ahead of him. Granted, we saw them very sparingly last year. Benjamin St. Juice was dealing with concussions. Derek was mostly a special teamer, used on only a few snaps on defense. But for them to come out in their second year playing the way they are consistently and to force Washington to basically move on from one veteran, their highest priced free agent signing, William Jackson, and then change the position of another veteran just to keep him on the field, I think that says a lot.
Yeah, I agree. And in some level, this is more of a perception thing because Jamin Davis was a first-round pick. In those first couple weeks, you know, we're hearing Jack Del Rio and Ron Rivera question him publicly. And, you know, Rivera has now subsequently said now a couple of times that that was done, at least from his perspective, done on purpose because he felt that Jamin Davis could handle that needed sort of the tongue lashing out loud. He's got military parents. He could handle it. Other players, it's going to be a little more behind the scene. But I'll still say just yes. I mean, look, here's how far we've come. We went from the beginning of the year, his coaches saying, I don't know. And I don't know what's going to happen here to today. When asked about like sort of the better who's playing well, it's like, oh, could, I think he was asked about John Allen and Payne making the Pro Bowl. He just started listing off guys and said that Jamin Davis could quietly be in that conversation. And I think we were all
started
like,
listing the whole defense. He's like, yes, but I think a few other guys should be added. Let me name the entire defense while we're at it.
Right. I'm just saying, like, if to go from that to that, even if the coach is being just overly optimistic.
Yes, correct. There's only one other person that should be in the Pro Bowl aside from Jonathan Allen, Daron Payne, in my opinion.
I'm going to guess he kicks a ball. Yeah.
Nailed it.
Yeah. Tressway definitely should be. And I mean, he literally, like, Washington's punting stats are the best in the league in numerous categories. Obviously, that would be because of him.
Yeah, he's bonkers. It's crazy.
All right. Your biggest concern at this point, besides injuries, is what? I'll still say the offensive line, because when you have to go up against, they're going to play Dallas later with obviously Micah Parsons and that pass rush. You're going to have to play the 49ers later with Bosa and that pass rush. You're going to have to play the Browns later with Myles Garrett. And then obviously if you get to the playoffs, you know, you're going to face some of the better teams. That's what I still wonder about. Whatever Heinicke's doing, it's working. But I, you know, when the talent level starts to improve and you're going up against these star players, what happens then? So I guess I would say that, but I mean, that's already been kind of a standard thing. It's probably not a shocker, but that to me is what still it seems like the biggest concern.
I would say just their vulnerability to making really costly mistakes in game. A lot of it is Heinicke. His decision-making is better, as we've discussed. But he still has a tendency to throw that one ball that can change a game. They have a rookie named John Ridgeway who gets a massive egregious penalty a game now. That could cost a game. I think they gave up a 40-yard play to Brandon Cooks yesterday. So it's much better, but they're still giving up these massive plays.
Right. The Eagles, like, this is where it's like hard to tell, like, what's the line between how well they're playing and getting a little bit lucky. The Eagles play where Quez Watkins gets the 40-yard catch, falls down, and then St. Juice keeps tracking him, knocks the ball away. So they don't even get one play having made that. They were already in field goal range, could have taken the lead, but good on Washington. Yeah. But it's like, yeah, right. I mean, there is the big play thing is still a vulnerability, for sure. The team MVP right now, I mean, candidates could include Terry McLaurin. It could include Jonathan Allen or Daron Payne. Could include Taylor Heinicke if we're saying there's a lot of momentum.
Taylor Heinicke. I think it's obvious. In terms of value to this team, player has affected this team more than Taylor Heinicke this season.
You're not even your boy Tress Way. You're going to
I think he's fantastic. But I think value to the team as a whole, nobody has changed the course of this team more than Taylor Heinicke, in my opinion. I mean, the offensive line plays better with him. Terry is more productive with him. The backs are better with him. They're winning with him. I think the defense has been lights out, but they can't win without Taylor. They can play well, but they can't win without Taylor.
We all of us at some point do the bit where we're making a point, we're making a take, and then we say, in my opinion. Do we do that because we don't want to come across as being rude or cocky? Because obviously it's your opinion. But I do this too. We all do this.
Yeah, and I do it, and I'm like, God, that is so redundant. Like, the editor in me is like, oh, what am I doing? Don't do it. And then I do it.
Yeah.
I had an old editor who's like, it's like when everybody says, I think, before every sentence, he would just lop off, I think. Well, obviously you think that if you're saying that, you know, like, so yes, that went through my mind and I did it anyway.
I was calling us out as a society for that. Not you in particular.
I felt personal.
I mean, now that I've asked this question to you, I don't even know what I think, because it's almost like hard to pick either of the defensive linemen because the other one is playing just as well. I kind of want to say Terry, but on the other hand, it's since Heinicke has come in that Terry has really taken off. He did have good numbers before with Wentz, but it was very hit or miss. It was the 40-yard catch, and then kind of he wouldn't catch the ball in the first
quarterback half. Couldn't get on the ball. Yes.
Right. So all right, I'll play along and go with Heinicke for that purpose. Last question, unless you come up with something of your own. After all this is said, there are still how many games we got left? 6 games to go. As we're talking, they are technically out of the playoffs. If the Niners lose tonight, Washington's in or whatever. They're right there. It almost doesn't even matter. They have 2 more games with the Giants who are ahead of them, a game with the Niners, a game with Dallas. It's conceivable that by the time they play in New York in week 13, that they could tie the Giants with a win, because the Giants this week are at Dallas and Washington's hosting Atlanta. So they could be right there. All that said, will the Manders make the playoffs?
I'm going with yes. It'll be a wild card. They'll be one and done, like 2020. But I feel like they're going to make it.
I did
what that. That means when a team just only gets a wild card spot and quickly loses and is out, I don't know. Yeah. I lack the brain power to debate that, but I think they'll make it.
I was at the Houston airport at 6 in the morning. Very jammed airport, by the way. The jammingest place on the planet at 6 in the morning today was the Houston airport for some reason. Sure. But anyway, so I'm talking to Kevin Sheehan, half asleep while we're talking, and he says to me in the end, are they going to make the playoffs? And I'm like, wow, am I half asleep? Because I think I'm going to say yes. Because they are playing well, but also, like, you just look at what's ahead of them. The NFC stinks. Like, I was not buying into the Eagles being some juggernaut even before the Washington beat them. And then we saw that they, you know, barely beat the Colts. And, you know, that could happen, but I don't know. I mean, I'm not convinced that Jalen Hurts is going to be a guy I'm counting on in the playoffs. Kirk Cousins is clearly a guy nobody is buying into for that. Dak Prescott, I don't know. Dallas hasn't won a playoff game in forever. Jimmy Garoppolo, the Niners win with him, but nobody's going to be, you know, fearing him. Look, if the Bucs get hot, obviously Brady is Brady. My point is that, man, like, if they actually can make the playoffs, which I'm saying they will, and their defense keeps this up, I don't know. I mean, why not them? The good thing is they are not forcing Heineke.
Why not them? Okay, Russell Westbrook.
Yeah, put that on a bumper sticker. But like, they're not forcing Heineke to throw the ball 38 times a game to win. They're recognizing the limitations. Run the ball, control the clock. This is what they did 2 years, or this is what they did last year during the winning streak. You do all that. I'm not saying they're going to make the Super Bowl, although that would be the capper to this whole thing, right? Dan Snyder holds the trophy after everything. But, I'm just saying the NFC is so lame. I don't know what to think anymore. So I'm saying they make the playoffs, and I'll leave it at that for now.
I already booked my flight for Phoenix.
I believe it. To go back to the thing earlier about Heineke QB1, if they make the playoffs, like, are we really going to say? And because if they make the playoffs, right now his record, I think, as a regular season starter is 11-9.
Yeah.
Right? So at that point, what are they going to say? He's not the starter. Maybe they still draft somebody in the first round, but like,
there are only two elite quarterbacks in the league right now. Like last year, you could get away with saying, we got to find that guy eventually. Well, there's only two of them right now. Pat Mahomes and Josh Allen. Aaron Rodgers, not good this year. Russell Wilson, not good this year.
I mean, I'd rather have Joe Burrow. I guess I'd rather have Justin Herbert. The Chargers are just bonkers. Sure.
Great.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Like, I feel like Heineke at this point is basically, okay, we can keep saying he's a backup, but I think there's probably 10 backups starting for teams. So, he's our guy, so we view him this way. Other teams are like, yeah, we don't have money to answer either, so why not him?
I have to go feed my dogs.
Yeah, good job on that.
Do you see what they're doing to me?
This dog
has been, sitting like this, and whenever I stop petting him, do you see this? He, paws me until I resume petting. And then I stop, and he does it again.
Well, this is what happens when I sit next to Paris at a game. Same thing.
Look at this. It's because I'm not feeding him. I know. Did you fail to feed Paris at the game?
Yeah. Well, this is the same thing that happens. Anything else for you? Anything we need to know about? Obviously, people need to go read you at the Washington Post, at Nikki Jhabvala, NikkiJhabvala on Twitter, as long as Twitter is around. Anything else we need to know? Anything you want to tell us to think about, look at, ponder?
I have a major story coming out soon. Epic.
You're just saying that to scare me, right?
It's about a dog.
Oh. But not your dog.
Not my dog.
Yeah. All right. Well, stay tuned for that one, people.
If that doesn't reel you into the Washington Post, I don't know what will.
If you don't get it, you don't get it. Nikki, pleasure as always. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.